Here, I'll help you. One sec.
Who are we?
Is that how you want it?
Yeah, thank you. Who are we and why are we here? So, Prahlad Maharaj, who is a great devotee of God, he has something to say on this. And I thought first I would read that and then read what Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, has to say about it, and then we'll speak about it a little bit. So Prahlad Maharaj instructs his peers that the human form of life affords one a chance to return home, back to Godhead. Therefore, every living entity, especially in the human form of life, must engage in devotional service to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. This devotional service is natural because Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most beloved, the master of the soul, and the well-wisher of all other living beings. And Srila Prabhupada's commentary on this says in part that the Supreme Lord Vishnu is the proprietor of the entire creation. He is the best well-wishing friend of all living entities, and he is the supreme enjoyer of everything. For this transcendental happiness, the living entity, that's you and I, has wandered throughout the universe in different forms of life and different planetary systems. But because he has forgotten his intimate relationship with Vishnu, he has merely suffered life after life. Therefore, the educational system in the human form of life should be so perfect that one will understand his intimate relationship with God or Vishnu. Every living entity has an intimate relationship with God. One should therefore glorify the Lord in the adoration of Shantaras or revive his eternal relationship with Vishnu as a servant in Dasyaras, a friend in Sakyaras, a parent in Vatsalyaras, or a conjugal lover in Madhuryaras. All these relationships are on the platform of love. So who are we and why are we here? Somehow the answer to that has something to do with relationships, right? And everybody wants to have satisfying relationships. Is there anybody here who thinks, no, I just don't ever want to have a relationship with anybody? You know, if you thought that, you wouldn't be here, because this is, after all, a social occasion, yes? So even on a material level, relationships are fundamental to who we are. In fact, people who study psychology and sociology tell us that human beings identify themselves. We define who we are in terms of our relationships to everybody else. You know, what is the first identity you have? You know, where does it come from? When you're a small child, your mother tells you what your name is. You don't even know your name unless someone tells you, unless you have a relationship with a person who can tell you, this is your identity. And as we get older, we have so many different kinds of relationships in relation to the different people in our lives. I'm someone's wife. I'm someone's mother. I'm someone's employee or employer. I'm someone's friend. I'm someone's mentor. You know, I'm someone's mentee. I don't know if that's actually a word. I use it anyway. You know, so all of these things help us figure out who we are. And they're so fundamental that if a child doesn't have relationships, the child's brain doesn't develop properly. You know, children who are raised in social isolation are permanently injured in their brain and cannot become full-functioning human beings. Solitary confinement is considered a very severe punishment. If you're put into the prison system and they have to punish you further, they put you in solitary confinement because it's such a heavy punishment. And after even a few weeks, it will cause mental illness in people who are in this situation because that lack of contact, that lack of relationship is so devastating to who we are. So everybody needs relationships. And in the material world, we're always seeking. You know, wherever we are, we're seeking to have a relationship with whoever's around us. You know, we may have a desire to have the most perfect relationship, but if we can't find that perfect relationship, we'll settle for, you know, whatever we can get, because we have to have some relationship. And I'm sure that we've all experienced that in the material world, on the material plane, our relationships are limited. You know, they're not perfect. Has anybody ever had a relationship that was so perfectly satisfying that they had no fear, no anxiety, and they didn't need any other relationship? If you have, please raise your hand and we'll ask you how you did it. Okay. You know, we don't know. You have. And with whom?
With him.
This is it. So, you know, Prahlad Maharaj tells us in this verse that when we have that perfect relationship with God, then that's when we're going to become satisfied. And, you know, that's what we all want. We all want contentment. You know, we do so many things because we want to become satisfied. So, how to get from where we are to there? We're in this context of relationships that, you know, and my husband and my daughter are here, please know that I'm very happy to be in relationships with you. I'm not complaining in any way. But, you know, we want to go farther. And even, I'm sure they would say the same in relation to me. You know, yes, you're a great wife, you're a great mother, but, you know, there's something higher. So we're looking for that relationship that doesn't end with the death of the body, that, you know, we're not going to get frustrated with the other person and say, that's it, you're out of my life. You know, we're looking for that relationship that doesn't leave us hankering for something more. And it comes, as we all know, from our relationship with the Supreme. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the source of everything. Everything emanates from me. And people who understand that, they perform devotional service and worship me. You know, this is every inclination we have, every propensity we have, comes from Krishna. So we have that tendency to want to be in a relationship. We have a tendency to want to give love and receive love. And that comes from Krishna. Because Krishna is, as great sages have told us, Krishna is the reservoir of all relationships. It's an interesting turn of phrase, isn't it? The reservoir of all relationships. When I first became aware that there was a supreme being, you know, I was much younger, child. I, you know, grew up in a Judeo-Christian environment, so I'm thinking in terms of the big guy in heaven with the long beard sitting on the throne. You know, that concept of the reservoir of all relationships is not something that ever would have popped into my mind at all. Because what does that mean? One of the things that it means, you know, because Krishna is so vast, the supreme being is so vast that we can't ever define the supreme in one sentence or from one point of view or with respect to one topic. But one of the things that that means is that every need we have to relate to somebody can be satisfied by being in a relationship with Krishna. So that feeling that we get in our heart that we want to give love and receive love, that will be satisfied by connecting with the Supreme Being, Krishna, the all-attractive. Just as we learn who we are on a material level in relationship to other people, we learn who we are on a spiritual level by understanding our relationship with God. Okay. So just like a small child, you know, we're being raised, we're, you know, baby in arms, oh, you're such a sweet, sweet little girl, sweet little boy. You know, we have to learn from our superiors, our parents, our authorities, who we are, you know, am I a boy, am I a girl, what's my name, where do I live, all of these, what are my characteristics, our parents reflect all that back to us. When we're in a relationship with Krishna, or we're beginning to try to be in a relationship with Krishna, that's where we find out who we really are, right? Because right now, I think that I'm, you know, a 49-year-old woman with a certain level of experience and intelligence and definitely very, very cool, right? Yeah. Y'all can see that, right? You know, but I have this illusion of who I am. And I don't know. I don't know who I really am. And I'm not alone in that. You know, that's the nature of the soul in the world. Because we all have a choice. Every living entity has a choice. We can turn toward God or we can turn away. That's the only choice we have. That's free will. God gives us that. And part of the illusion of being in the material world, and I know this firsthand, is the illusion of control. That I think that I'm in control. You know, I have my little field of activity, and I do things, and I certain things result, and I think that I cause them. You know, and I especially think that if I can just arrange the material energy in a particular way, if I can just manipulate things within my little field of activity in just the right way, I'm going to become happy. I'm going to become satisfied. I'm going to become content. And when I'm not happy, I'm not content, I tend to think it's because, well, I just didn't get that manipulation right. But the truth is, I'm not in control of anything. You know, the material energy works on its own accord. We get actions and reactions according to our karma. And somebody else is actually in control. One guess, who is it? Krishna. God. God is in control of everything. You know, we have the illusion, I have the illusion that I'm in control. And there's a story that kind of illustrates how powerful that illusion can be. You guys know the story of how Indra became a pig? Lord Indra, you want to hear the story about how Lord Indra became a pig? Lord Indra is the king of the material universe. He is the most exalted of the living entities embodied in this material world. And he lives in the heavenly planets, and he lives in a mansion far, far beyond the likes of any we would see on this planet. Even Bill Gates cannot compare to Lord Indra. So he's enjoying his senses at a commensurate level that, you know, whatever kind of enjoyment we can imagine, the most opulent clothing, foodstuffs, recreation, whatever you can think of, you know, pales in comparison to what's offered in the heavenly planets, and Lord Indra gets the tip-top most of what's in the heavenly planets. But Srila Prabhupada explains that somehow he was cursed to become a pig. So, you know, he's a wild boar in the forest. He's got a pig wife, you know, this sow, you know, and they've got little piglets. And he's enjoying family life in the context of this pig family. And, you know, pigs don't have the most refined senses, so he's enjoying eating stool and rolling in the mud, and he's perfectly content, you know, more than content. He's enjoying like anything. So, you know, the time the curse comes to an end, and Narada Muni comes and says, well, you know, you can come back now to the heavenly planets. And he says, what heavenly planets? No, I'm here, you know, I'm satisfied, I'm not leaving, you know. And so, you know, there's different versions of the story, but the one that I heard is, you know, the demigods want him to come back and take up his post as their king, and so they're thinking, well, you know, what are we going to do? He's attached to the pig wife, so, you know, we'll eliminate her, you know. And still he's you know, devastated. My wife is dead, you've killed my wife, but, you know, my piglets are here, I'll stay. And, you know, so they eliminate the piglets, and still Lord Indra's, you know, he's devastated again, but, you know, he's got this great body, and he's not giving it up. And, you know, finally they have to kill the pig body, and then he can remember, oh, I had another identity. I was the king of the demigods. And that's all within the material realm. We haven't even gotten to the spiritual realm yet. So Maya, you know, the illusory energy of the Lord is so powerful. She can make us think where anybody or anything become attached to the most ridiculous things. You know, so Maya's, we had the choice, you know, do we serve God, or do we try to serve our own senses? Do we try to enjoy separately from God? We've made the choice at some time in the past that we wanted to try to be a little separate from God. Not that there's any such thing as a little separate from God, either you're connected or not, but putting a good face on it, where we tried to be separate from God. And so now, Maya's job is to test our sincerity when we think that we want to come back. You know, we're thinking, now maybe I'd like to try to connect with the Supreme. At least I'd like to know more about it. That's why we're here, right? In this temple, this program. We're thinking at least, at the very least, I'd like to know a little bit more about the Supreme. So Maya's job is to test our sincerity. And to that end, you know, she has all of her tricks. And one of the ways that I look at this is, you know, in my day job, I'm a lawyer. And one of the things that I like to do better than fighting directly with my opponents is to negotiate, right? And the key to a good negotiation is to let the other side walk away with a whole bunch of stuff that really doesn't amount to anything and leave all the good stuff on the table for me and my client, okay? So you want to trick them into thinking, wow, you guys are getting the best end of the deal. We're just rolling over. You're too tough for us. Take it, you know, and good luck to you. You know, and that's what Maya does to us. She gives us all kinds of stuff, you know. You can be handsome, you can be beautiful, you can be popular, you can be wealthy, you can be intelligent, you can be long-lived, you can have so many wonderful things. And we don't notice that the real prize is still there on the table. And that prize is love. But not this, you know, ephemeral love that we get that comes and goes, that wanes and waxes, that can be very, very overwhelming, you know, but that is ultimately going to end with the life in this body, the love that's eternal. That's the real prize. And it's, you know, it's still there on the table. So we want to learn how to get that prize. You know, we want to learn to, we're going to be tough negotiators here. We're going to tell Maya, no, no, we're not going to be satisfied with anything less than permanent connection with the Supreme Lord. So how to do that? Well, Prahlad Maharaj, in the verse that we spoke at the beginning, he has the answer. Devotional service by worshiping the Supreme Lord. And there's all kinds of, you know, instructions on how to do that. You know, all kinds of books. This is one volume of, I don't know, how many? 60? 70? Anybody know off the top of their head how many volumes of Bhagavad Gita?
Well, depends which printing, but there are 12 cantos.
12 cantos, okay. There's a Bhagavad Gita. There's so many different instructions. But there are certain characteristics. The other thing is that devotional service may vary according to time, place, and circumstance. So, you know, at a certain age, we may have certain practices, and, you know, depending on our circumstances, they may change. But there are certain characteristics of devotional service that don't change. And I'd like to share those with you. Devotional service in its pure form, the kind of offering that we want to make to the Supreme so that we can have that permanent connection with the Supreme, that should be uninterrupted, unmotivated, and favorable. Okay, and favorable is in there because there are people who are inimical to the Lord, who constantly and, you know, without any, I don't know what their motivation is, but they think about Krishna or God all of the time, but not in a favorable way. And one example is we have a big festival every year in Venice Beach, the Rathayatra, when Lord Jagannath is on the far right-hand side of the altar there, goes out for his chariot ride. And if you've been, you know it's blissfully ecstatic, and if you haven't been, you definitely want to go next summer when they have it. But every year, this group of people comes to protest and criticize, and I'm not sure what their story is, but they're just rude and mean and nasty, but they've been coming for 20-something years, 25, 30 years. I mean, they're faithful to attend this festival, you know? And they're, you know, their effort is there. They're just totally, you know. Hey, take the shot of it. You know? But we want a little higher level of service, right? You know, it should be favorable, okay? So that's number one. We should be in a positive way instead of a negative. So the unmotivated part, that's the part that I'm really, well, I struggle with all of it, but that's the part that has my attention. My struggle with the unmotivated aspect of devotional service has my attention right now. Because we want to make offerings to Krishna. We want to give Krishna of our time, of our energy, and most of all, of our love. We want to cultivate some love for Krishna and offer that to the Lord. And I find myself, you know, often wanting to give what I feel like giving. You know, I would really like to, you know, sow something. I like to sow. Okay. So regardless of whether Krishna actually needs new clothes or not, that's what I'm going to offer. Prabhupada gives the example, you know, if Krishna wants water and you want to drink milk, you know, what are you going to offer? Are you going to offer him milk because that's what you want to take the prasadam? You know, or are you going to offer water because that's what Krishna actually wants? So to cultivate that mood of, you know, what does Krishna want, not what do I want? And then uninterrupted, well, that's, you know, that's definitely a challenge also, because we all have the best of intentions when it comes to serving the Lord. But I don't know about the rest of you, I sometimes get a little tired, a little discouraged, a little distracted, you know, so it becomes a challenge. So what to do? What to do? We've left the association of God, now we're trying to get back. Maya's giving us challenges, and there's a standard. It's a little tough to meet it sometime. Who can we go to for help? Anybody got any ideas?
The devotees?
Well, definitely the devotees, absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why Sadhu Sangha, or the association of devotees, is so important, because it goes back to relationships. You can't do this alone. So we have to have people around us to reflect back to us, what's my identity, who am I, why am I here? Oh yeah, I forgot for a minute, but now I remember. I want to be that perfect servant of the Lord. And the spiritual master, definitely, you know. But ultimately, Krishna promises us this, that he will give us the facility to serve him, so that we are in the position of coming to the Lord saying, I would like to give you something, but I'm not even qualified to do that. And Krishna says, don't worry. I will preserve what you have and carry what you lack. In other words, I will make the arrangements so that you can offer me some service. You know, that's how much love there is from the Lord. And that's how willing he is to accept us. All he's asking for from us is just a little bit of an attempt, just a little effort. So there's a very nice pastime in this regard, that there were two very great saints, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, who were servants of Lord Chaitanya, who's an incarnation of Krishna, who appeared in the 15th century. And there's one pastime where Rupa Goswami wants to cook a meal for Sanatana Goswami. Now, that doesn't sound so challenging, right? Except that they were extremely renowned sages, and their dwelling place, they lived under trees. They didn't have a home. They didn't have cooking pots. They didn't have a pantry full of, you know, ingredients that they could use. So what to do? You know, it's like, you know, it's a challenge. But this young girl came to Rupa Goswami and said, my mother instructed me to bring this foodstuff to you, and here you are. So suddenly, Rupa Goswami has this facility where he can cook a meal, offer it to Krishna, and give the resulting prasadam, or mercy of the Lord, to his brother, Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami is very happy to accept the meal, but he's curious. Hey, where did this come from? We're renunciates. We're impoverished. We don't even have a dwelling place, what to speak of a stock pantry. So how did this come about? And Rupa Goswami tells him, well, this young girl came and she offered, you know, the foodstuff. So I my desire to serve you was fulfilled. And Sanatana Goswami says, oh no, we are in so much trouble. That girl was Radharani. Oh, the feminine aspect of God, the Lord's internal pleasure potency herself appeared. And, you know, now we've accepted service from God. You know, we're in deep trouble. But not really. Because that's the nature of the relationship between the Lord and the devotee. That the devotee wants to serve the Lord, and the Lord wants to serve the devotee. So, you know, somehow, because of my improper conditioning or, you know, the material energy, when someone says surrender, I have this idea that, you know, there's a big, bad voodoo daddy sitting up there, you know, on the heavenly throne that is going to be really, really angry with me if I don't get it right and surrender right now, you know? And then it's like, oh, gosh, that doesn't sound fun. I don't want to do that. And I don't even really want to think about it because I feel guilty and uncomfortable and just all yucky, and I think I'll go watch TV, right? Yeah. Sound familiar? Okay. But Krishna actually wants to love us, and he wants us to love him. So he's just waiting, you know? And the really wonderful thing is we can, you know, quote-unquote, blow it over and over again. You know, get up in the morning with the best of intentions, try to begin our service to the Lord, fall short, and Krishna never stops helping us, waiting for us, giving us the facility to continue our efforts until we actually become perfect. So, you know, that's the supreme relationship. That's who we are. That's why we're here. And I don't know what time it is or what time I'm supposed to stop.
Well, I look at the time, it's 1:45, and then there's time for question after that. Right now it's 1:40. We forgot to give you a clock. There should be a clock.
Oh, no, there is, but I'm old. I can't read it. Teeny tiny. So 5 more minutes? Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. So Krishna is wanting us to come to him and wanting, not just wanting us to come to him, but wanting to serve us to make the arrangements so that we can come to him. So one of the instructions that he makes sure that we're given, and one of the dispensations of this age, is that there's a very simple process for awakening our relationship with him, our knowledge, our connection with him. And that is the chanting of God's names. And in this age of Kali Yuga, which is a very difficult age to live in, a very difficult age to practice spiritual life in, we're told that we can chant this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by this means, we can become connected with God. Srila Prabhupada says that just as a river naturally runs to the sea, just as naturally and effortlessly as that, our God consciousness will awaken if we chant this mantra. And one nice example of how precious this mantra is has to do again with Rupa Goswami, whom we mentioned before. One devotee was told by his spiritual master, you go and see Rupa Goswami because he has a very great treasure. Right? So I want you to go and get this Chintamani stone. A Chintamani stone, also called a touchstone, you touch it to metal and it turns the metal into gold. The alchemists in medieval Europe, that was what they were trying to create, was this, how do we turn base metal into gold? So a touchstone does this. And the devotee goes to Rupa Goswami, you know, folded hands, accept my obeisances, I understand you have a touchstone. And Rupa Goswami says, yes, I have it. It's behind, you know, my living quarters in the trash. You can take it. Feel free. So the devotee takes the touchstone from the trash, walks down the path, and then he has that aha moment. Yes. If you keep this in the trash, what are your real treasures? So he goes back and he asks that question. You know, if this is what you're throwing away, what are you keeping? And Rupa Goswami says, the real treasure is this Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So now you know who you are, why you're here, and what to do about it. Okay? You're a servant of the Supreme Lord. You want to connect with the Lord in a permanent way, and you can do that by chanting Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments? Yes, Jason Prabhu.
Thank you for the class.
Thank you.
One thing that came up just in my mind as far as a question earlier in your class when you were talking about control and how, like, the illusory conception is that I'm in control, whereas the true reality is that I have no control, or basically you said Krishna's in control.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit more about if there is a balance of control, or mm-hmm. is it black or white, where I literally have no control, and Krishna is the supreme controller, which obviously the latter is true, but do we have any control?
Hmm. Well, we have control over what we choose to do. We don't have control over the results. And actually, Krishna explains that there are the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And they operate in such a way on us that they, according to our karma, influence our desires, our thoughts. Like, you know, for a long time, and I still really wrestle with this, I'm really identified with my intellect and my mind. You know, I kind of get that I'm not my body, but I have a real hard time understanding that I'm not my mind. So my thoughts and my feelings seem very, very real to me, you know, especially my feelings, right? You feel sad, you feel angry. It's really hard to say, that's not what's real, that's just a feeling. But actually, that's just the material energy working on us, working on the soul, creating a subtle body and different reactions so that, you know, we manifest a desire to go climb Mount Everest, or we experience certain feelings of despair or ecstasy or, you know, whatever. But that's the material energy. So we can manipulate our bodies, our minds, our, you know, whatever, but the results are according to karma. And once we take up the process of spiritual life, Krishna says he's going to make arrangements for us to make advancement. So, you know, once we start chanting Hare Krishna, once we start thinking, okay, Lord, I'd like to come a little closer to you, it may be that instead of just getting straight up karma, Krishna is actually making some arrangements so that, you know, whatever happens helps us to come closer to him. But in terms of, you know, can I make a decision, do something, and control the outcome? Yeah, probably not. No. You know, we have free will, but that free will is, can I make an effort to develop spiritually, or can I make an effort to go the other way? That's what we have real control of. Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, when we were with Krishna one time, so is there any description what happened at that time? Because we were having all kind of pleasures there. How come the sheepish thought came, you know, we can be a really powerful, more powerful than him and all that kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, it should not happen at that time when you're with him, you know? How come this thought came, and didn't Krishna's all other devotees taught us, hey guys, you're doing the wrong thing. Don't do that.
And I have that same question. I am not qualified to answer that question. So maybe there's someone else, Mahaprabhu. Yes, please.
Get ready. So unless there was a choice, okay, first there has to be choice for you to have a freedom. And if you don't have freedom to choose between A and B, then what are you? You're just a machine. And then on the other hand, to have a gradation, every time you talk in terms of should, you're really casting a moral judgment. Now, moral judgment basically means that you have a gradation of qualities of anything, of a work, of an action, of an object, of a relationship with one thing with another. Therefore, there always has to be their choice. The choice from, like, as bad as you can imagine to as good as you can imagine and everything in between. So if you want to cut that out, then you basically strip reality from personality. That's a philosophical explanation. And for that reason, you always have that freedom to make that choice. Krishna,
Now, why we would make it, that remains a mystery.
Why? You have that freedom. You can do that. And we do it even now.
Yes,
I mean, why do... I mean, you gave the example of Indra, who was enjoying the life of a pit, which is, you know... Or, you know, their people enjoy hurting other people. They actually get pleasure.
Indeed.
And I mean, look at the you know, varieties of consciousness. I mean, you have people from Mother Teresa to Hitler and everything in between. Mm-hmm. That's a choice you can always make.
This question is different. No.
Yeah.
Maybe before.
I answered that. I've answered that.
Why we degenerated?
I have answered that.
The
unless you have the two, unless you have the two opposites, you cannot have moral values. Moral values means that there is a gradation of good. In other words, good, better, best. You know, bad, really bad, terrible.
And without the freedom to turn away from Krishna, there is no love.
Yeah, imagine music with one note. There's no music. So similarly, even in the spiritual creation, there is a gradation of activities. And that moment when you choose a terrible love, you're out of there. You're in a different location where you can join the crew of love.
No. Once you are there, then you are synchronized with Krishna, I believe. You know, and once you are synchronized with him, that thought will never ever appear.
Who says?
Rajendranandana Prabhu.
It's a question that sometimes people wrestle with their entire life, because it really is in the realm of inconceivability. Because right now we're still thinking with this temporary body, and we're talking about something that's transcendental to that, completely different. And our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, for such persons, would encourage us, try to keep the value of that question in perspective. If you're drowning in the ocean and you're simply trying to figure out, how did I get here? When somebody's offering you a rope or a life preserver, throwing it from the ship down to you, you need to try to understand how to get out. Once you get back there, because we will be full of knowledge, as you're saying, then you won't have that question that's answered. So right now you may not understand, even though he is giving the philosophical understanding, it may not set right with you or satisfy you, because there's some inconceivability about it. But if you just prioritize, let's get back, let's focus on not how we got here, but how we get back there, that will really satisfy you.
I mean, look at the questions Arjuna asked of Krishna, and Krishna's answers in the Gita. Krishna never told Arjuna, okay, now I'm taking over you, you know, and you have no choice. You always have that choice.
We always have a choice.
You always have that choice. And that choice comes in gradations, and bit by bit you can find yourself out of Krishna's company.
Are there any other questions?
Yes,
hi, Krishna. Hi,
Krishna. Krishna is antarjami, knows what we want, what we desire. But it's very difficult to know what Krishna wants, like water and milk. So what I do at home, I offer water, milk, and juice.
Sorry, Krishna. Very nice. How do we know what Krishna wants? Well, when we're in this conditioned state where we're not yet connected with God, then we have to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. You know, that's one of the ways in which Krishna facilitates our coming home, is by sending us the teachers, the guides. So, you know, for example, the worship of Radha Giridhari here in the temple, there's quite a lot of rules and regulations so that it doesn't become whimsical, so that, you know, we're doing it according to a standard that's set down. So, good question. Yes?
Yeah, you talk about these people that come to Rath Yatra. Mm-hmm. That makes me think about, so all the characteristics and emotions are all created by God. Mm-hmm. We call them some positive, some negative, you know, love, devotion versus anger or envy. But depending on the nature of individuals, they have certain characteristics prevalent in them, right? Mm-hmm. The question is, it more important to develop these, you know, positive kind of characteristics, or whatever you have is to direct everything towards Krishna?
Well, there's two aspects here. One is that we have certain tendencies and characteristics, but that's that temporary, you know, material identity. That's not, you know, who we really are. So, you know, saying, well, I have a tendency to be angry, so I'm just going to go ahead and be angry at Krishna, probably isn't the most productive way of trying to connect with the Supreme. Krishna says that, you know, to facilitate our connection with him, we actually want to try to come to the mode of goodness, so that we want to develop some of these, you know, materially positive characteristics, peacefulness, cleanliness, you know, compassion. But on the transcendental level, you know, goodness, the mode of goodness, while it's a very high level, is still a material mode. Once we transcend that, you know, a person who is actually connected with the Supreme, then we look at it a little differently. That, you know, Prabhupada said, we are not good men, we are not bad men, we are Krishna's men. So anger used in the service of Krishna, it's fine. You know, that's what Arjuna was instructed to do, fight and kill for Krishna. In that context, you know, in that particular time and place, that was the right thing to do. So, yeah, it's not that characteristics are inherently bad or good. It's, are they bringing us to Krishna or are they keeping us away? Yes?
Is there any documentation, like in Srimad Bhagavatam or any other documentation, that says what would be the nature of the intersoul relationships in Krishna Loka?
Well, It is stated in Gita, Bhagavatam, different places, that there are five different kinds of relationships that we can have with Krishna. It was mentioned in that purport, the Srila Prabhupada's commentary that I read. The neutral relationship, kind of awe and reverence, I know that God is there. The servant relationship, the friend relationship, the parent relationship, and the intimate conjugal relationship. All of those. Now, you know, what any particular individual's relationship with Krishna will be in the spiritual world, you know, that's the postgraduate study, and we're still in elementary school kind of thing, you know. So
the problem with the situation is, we have gone through so many lifetimes according to the religion itself, so let us say 100, just to pick a number. Now, we will have so many different types of relationships. Let us say some five lifetimes ago, some other, like a man or a woman, so many things can happen. So I'm bewildered in terms of when we return, all of us return to Krishna Loka, we have so many people or souls coming in with so many dynamics that have happened. And what would be,
I mean,
is it all vanished? How is that?
I'm not entirely sure I understood the question.
It's not exactly the relationship with Krishna that I'm trying to talk, because we are connected with so many souls on this planet.
Okay, so what happens to our relationships with each other? Is that what you're asking?
So another lifetime, so many more. Who knows? And 10 lifetimes ago, it was somebody else who was the husband, or a wife, or a son, or a daughter. Like, once we go to moksha, we might realize, my God, these 100 different people were my children, you know, like that.
And everyone has a relationship with everyone else, but it's in the context of we're all in relationship to Krishna. So in the spiritual world, Mother Yashoda and Father Nanda, you know, they have a relationship. But Krishna, you know, they understand that Krishna is in the center. So, you know, in some sense, just to give a simple analogy, this spiritual life is like learning to play an instrument. You know, so when you first start out, you're doing scales, right? How many people enjoy playing scales, right? No one. You know, it's boring, it's repetitive. We want to express the creativity in our hearts, right? But if you want to learn to play well, you have to play the scales. You have to follow, you know, the teacher's lessons and practice and do so many things. You have to do a little austerity, right? Okay, and then when you learn to play, it becomes spontaneous. You can make just the most beautiful music, right? You know, we listen to sometimes, Krishna says I'm the ability in man, we listen to very talented musicians and wow, right? So, but it starts with that regulated practice. So, you know, we're in that stage of the regulated practice. More shall be revealed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hare
Krishna. So, everyone, please rise. And if you could drop these mats up in the corner, that would be helpful. Thank you.
We should have moved by the time that this...